Welcome to The Connection, where humans and aliens converse, and where all the dots are connected. I'm Nancy of Zeta Talk, an emissary for aliens from Zeta Reticuli. They are here to warn of great cataclysms on Earth and advise how to survive this. The pending pole shift is not the end. Man will make his next leap forward to live a better time when aliens will live among us. The George W. Bush saga was one of grim ambition to secure the White House going into the anticipated arrival of Planet X in 2003. As is well known, the 2000 election was secured not by the popular vote, but by manipulation of the vote in Florida, where the vote count had to be stopped, and was done by Supreme Court fiat. Gore lost Florida by some 500 or so votes officially, but had won the nation by all but three electoral votes going into Florida. But evidence of voter fraud to the tune of tens of thousands of votes missing for Gore was evident in Florida. After all, would Jeb Bush fail to deliver the state to his brother? And I quote from Zeta Talk, Popular Vote, written December 2000. What possible reason would there be to call out the U.S. Supreme Court to defend a candidate that had lost the popular vote on all fronts? Gore had won an edge of 21 electoral votes by some 300,000 popular votes and was only three electoral votes shy of winning the presidency. Gore also won the popular vote in Florida, a fact clear to even the ultra-right Buchanan, who admitted the 3,000 votes he received above what might be expected in the Jewish enclave of Palm Beach were not his votes, but Gore's. The Florida vote recount was stopped repeatedly by partisan loyalists of the Bush family. Where this might have been expected in Florida, controlled by the Bush family, what would cause the Supreme Court to break its long-standing tradition of not getting involved in presidential contests, a tradition that had endured throughout its history? But what would cause the Supreme Court, when stopping a legally called recount, an effort to examine every ballot for the intent of the voter, to cast a blind eye to one group of voters while giving an irrational protection to another group? The only difference appeared to be partisanship, that the judges themselves had been appointed by Republicans, as the final vote was strictly along partisan lines. But is there more to this picture? Did the Supreme Court not have more to lose in this vote, in that the public looks to it to be nonpartisan and supporting the Constitution? Where talk of disenfranchised voters and a partisan Supreme Court will die down, the shock that the citizenry feels at what is a betrayal of their voting rights will not diminish. Often the larger the shock, the greater the stunned silence, so that the long-reaching and long-lasting effect of this shock are not gauged by the smug winning party. Nevertheless, a deep distrust of the new administration will be the result of this action, which will only be understood when attempts to win over the public for new initiatives seems to fall flat. In disenfranchising the American voter, as well as the Florida voter, the Supreme Court did more than express partisanship. They displayed, to those looking behind the moves, a cold and firm plan of the wealthy elite to survive during the coming changes, at the expense of democracy and the people those in government service have sworn to serve. Did those at the fore of the GOP campaign and voting to suppress the voter rights from the bench of the Supreme Court know of this ultimate plan? If not in full understanding of the circumstances which would have called for such steps, they understood that too little would be available to go around and that choices would have to be made. In this, they threw themselves in with those who were to survive, the elite, and deserted those they had sworn to serve. The public can expect more of the same over the next few months and years until the coming pole shift. The U.S. government will increasingly serve the elite and will fail to give any explanation of their actions to the public. In this blatant service to the elite, they will become increasingly irrelevant, an administration serving itself and not a leader the public could respect or take seriously. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. It's been stated by many that only those approved by the real powers that run the world, the puppet masters, get on the ballot. That being so, then Gore would have been approved, the puppet master's agenda served by either candidate. But there are many roads to Rome, and the manner in which the Clinton-Gore team served the puppet master's agenda took a radical turn under Bush-Cheney. How might this have differed under Gore as president? And I quote from Zeta Talk, "If Gore had prevailed," written September 2004. If Gore had prevailed, would 9/11 have occurred? Or was it, as we have stated, directed at Bush and his arrogance, not the U.S. as a country? Would the invasion of Iraq have occurred, or would terrorism have been treated as an international problem, as it was under Clinton, to be resolved with close coordination with other countries, including Islamic countries, rather than alienation of those countries as has occurred under Bush? We have stated that 9/11 was assisted by a European countries and would not have succeeded without this assistance. It was not, as the U.S. public is told endlessly in the media, strictly an attack by bin Laden's associates, any more than a hitman is the cause of an assassination. Bush knew of the threats being made, with the U.S. braced for this and practicing a response. Thus, the delay in reaction to the actual attacks was confusion over whether this was yet another practice drill or the real thing. Bush is not the master, but a puppet, controlled by those with great wealth who literally own not only U.S. corporations, but by the U.S. national debt, the political process as well. The Bush-Cheney arm of this superstructure of world control had been letting their control of the U.S. military go to their heads, a restless and arrogant puppet that was brought to heel after many warnings with the 9/11 attack. Bush was even braced for an assassination attack. How would this have differed if Gore had prevailed? Gore, like Kerry, was well known to the puppet masters and not a wild card. Liberal and conservative alike, Democrat or Republican, all those in key positions of power or heading there are well aware of what the puppet masters who control the world by their great wealth are desiring. There are open conferences, emissaries who deliver messages, and daily directives. The puppet master wants to be positioned to control the world's oil supplies, should the pole shift predicted occur. Oil will be the next commodity, as all paper money will be considered worthless, and gold and silver as a base, thus worthless also. Worth must be a real thing of value, as oil can run ships, fly planes, fuel helicopters and tractors, and formulate into fertilizer for fields. It represents growth in the future. Thus, had Gore prevailed, he would have been pressed to guard and secure the oil fields, using the U.S. military in this service. How does this differ from the situation under Clinton? In that the military was already guarding the no-fly zone, was there, positioned to guard both Iraq and Saudi oil, only continuation of a policy was needed. Nigeria, Venezuela, the Alaska fields, all were in easy reach for the U.S. military. The oil fields of Russia, operated by the giant Yukos Corporation, were also considered under the puppet master's control. With the status quo under Clinton continued, had Gore prevailed, neither 9/11 nor the Iraq invasion would have occurred, and the Iraq oil fields would not be in disarray, unusable as they are today. The puppet master is not amused. This rage will be directed at Bush, whose arrogance will not protect him from a force far better organized and powerful than any control of the executive branch of the U.S. can muster. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The problem was not just that Bush had the oil fields in Iraq in flames and the country at the point of civil war, but primarily because the U.S. military was in revolt against Bush. Here was a man who had gone AWOL from the reserves, refused to take medical exams while in the reserves, with all evidence pointing to cocaine usage, resulting in loss of his flight status. The Zetas warned of this revolt going into the August vacation month in 2003. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Changing Captains, written July 2003. The U.S. military has lost respect utterly for the commander-in-chief. The military was reluctant to go into Iraq, its advice ignored while its leadership treated like robots expected to follow orders without question. Rebellion at the highest levels is seething just under the surface. End of the quote. And in August of 2003, rebellion took action. For Skolmid, on August 1, 2003, the football, control of the nuclear codes, was taken away from Bush. And I quote from Rents.com, George W. Bush denuded. 8 days before Commander-in-Chief President Nixon was stripped of all authority, the indication of it in the topmost circles was that the football was taken away from him. That's the term used for the nuclear code briefcase always carried next to the president by a Marine guard. In Nixon's case, White House Chief of Staff General Alexander Haig was ordered to do so by a Jesuit relative. Thus, the Pentagon could not carry out the orders of President Nixon since he had been divested of all authority. On the same day that George W. Bush verbally announced that we are not leaving Iraq, a top group in the U.S. military had let it be known that Bush was no longer an authority as commander-in-chief. Those well informed on the subject contend that three symbols of his authority were shorn from Bush's presence. End of the quote from Rents.com. The Zetas not only confirmed this, but stated that the U.S. military considered Gore their commander-in-chief. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Military Shuffle, written November 2004. The U.S. military has been a sham, publicly, since August 2003, when the football, the briefcase of nuclear codes, was taken from Bush, deemed a highly unstable megalomaniac, as the war in Iraq demonstrated. The Navy, long at the heart of Planet X cover-up in its position as timekeeper of the world, and with tentacles into observatories worldwide, setting the sun and moon times, and even controlling USGS and Quake information before it is disseminated, allied with Bush. It was rumored at that time that prosecution or impeachment of Bush might occur, but this was deemed an impossible path given the Republican Congress and friends on the Supreme Court. Time would fix this wound, or so it was presumed, with the elections around the corner, but now that blatant election fraud has also occurred, the sham has become a burden. Gore, as the legitimate elected president in 2000, will continue as commander-in-chief after 2004, being respected for his 8 years as an executive in the vice presidential capacity, and also respected for his challenge of the voting irregularities in 2000, firm and determined in the fight. Kerry is viewed as lacking in both these qualities, as with the current CIA purges, the DOD purges after the 2000 coup of the White House were aimed at placing political cooperatives at the helm. So the agency would not be professional as much as political. Hundreds of early retirements occurred before the DOD finally rebelled. Those caught facing the public in a sham had the uncomfortable position of having to pretend that Bush was their commander-in-chief and to pretend that their orders had weight. What now with more of the same ahead? The primary quality of those who will surround a crippled Bush in the months ahead, whether replacing military commanders or cabinet vacancies, will be the ability to lie with a straight face, repeatedly, with no emotional repercussions. Sociopaths. The secondary quality will be loyalty, blind loyalty, the type of loyalty a child has to a parent where the faults simply are not seen and certainly not entertained, as the child then feels insecure. Cloying, clinging personalities with poor judgment and no real inner strength. The third quality will be blind ambition, the desire to see the self-important, in with the winning or controlling crowd, and damn the pain and misery this causes elsewhere. self-serving ambition. The fourth quality will be longevity, a proven track record of such loyalty or ability to live with a lie. The last quality to be considered is competence, and thus the palace guard, whatever their title, becomes increasingly irrelevant. See this as a split in the administration. Memos are ignored, orders simply not heard, and existing track continued despite a demand to change direction. Superficial cooperation or silence and stupor when in the presence of the pretender, Bush, and his cronies. This may not be apparent until a real crisis hits, requiring action, when the barking orders given by the pretender are ignored, but the federal agencies function according to their original mandates and according to their conscience. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Shuffles within the military promptly occurred, putting the Navy in charge, rewarding their loyalty to Bush. And I quote from some press releases. Acting Secretary of the Army, Les Brownlee, submitted his resignation today, effective December 3, 2004. Brownlee served as the Undersecretary of the Army from November 2001 to May 2003, at which time he also assumed the duties of the Acting Secretary of the Army. And from another quote, Secretary James Roche today submitted his resignation as Secretary of the U.S. Air Force. Secretary Roche plans to depart January 20, 2005, or sooner if his successor is confirmed by the Senate before then. And from another, Navy Admiral Keating assumed command from General Eberhardt in ceremonies here November 5th. The former director of the Joint Staff is the first non-Air Force officer to command NORAD since its creation in 1958. General Eberhardt has been commander of NORTHCOM since its creation following the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks, bringing together the four military branches, including the reserve components and the U.S. Coast Guard under one new command. End of the quotes from these press releases. Per the Zetas, the puppet master wanted Kerry to prevail in 2004, wanted new leadership for several reasons. The puppet master wanted the U.S. military under the control of a respected president so that the U.S. military would protect his assets. And, like Iraq, this was now out of control. He wanted new leadership. And I quote from Zeta Talk, New Leadership, written September 2004. Under Gore, the earth changes and economic problems resulting from an uptick in disasters would have been the central issue, and his approach to handling this would have likewise been vastly different from the Bush-Cheney tack. Gore, as Kerry, entered the fray in Vietnam and did not step away into safe zones as did both Bush and Cheney, who evaded service. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. And thus we had Kerry, with his strong military background in Vietnam, his hero status, his unquestioned valor in danger as a swift boat commander, running against Bush. But Bush and Cheney, determined to be in the White House, in control of the most powerful military in the world, on top of the oil fields of the world, were equally determined to stay in the White House. The massive 2004 voter fraud was massively underreported in the media. Computers collecting the results can have their results changed as easily as an Excel spreadsheet on a PC. How is this done? And I quote from an article called How to Hack the Vote, the Short Version, by Chuck Herron, who has so many qualifications they run off the page. This is from the ChuckHerron.com website. If the GEMS machine is networked, wander into the building and quietly put a wireless access point on the same network segment as the tabulation PC, maybe behind the copier someplace, and then casually come in from across the street using a laptop and wireless card. We know they're connected by modems. Find the telephone number of the office the PC is located in and use a war dialing program such as ToneLoc to dial all of the numbers in that exchange looking for a hanging modem. These machines typically have hanging modems installed, so this should be a fairly easy way in. Or come in through the internet. It's reported that many of these machines are connected to the internet to enable results to be queried to pull data from the central PCs. Window PCs on the internet are inherently vulnerable, particularly if they're not behind a firewall. Since a firewall would prevent the legitimate queries from being made, these machines are likely at extreme risk for being compromised through their internet connection. Then there are the really easy ways. If you're an insider, you already have the phone numbers and any usernames and passwords you may need. Dial into the machine, authenticate normally, and then manipulate the data. Or walk up to the machine and use the keyboard and mouse. End of the quote from Chuck Herron. How easy is it to change the counts? Per a demonstration made on CNBC, and I quote, Bev Harris, the Seattle grandmother who started blackboxvoting.org from her living room, pointed out that regardless of how votes were tabulated, the real counting is done by computers. That central tabulator computer is a Windows-based PC. Diebold uses a program called GEMS, which fills the screen of the PC and effectively turns it into a central tabulator system. It's running on a Windows PC. Close the Diebold GEMS software, go back to the normal Windows PC desktop, clip on the My Computer icon, choose Local Disk C, open the folder titled GEMS, and open the subfolder called Local DB, which stands for Local Database. Double-click on a file in that folder titled Central Tabulator Votes, which causes the PC to open the vote count in a database program like Excel. Cut and paste or type and change the vote counts as desired. This left no tracks whatsoever, and it would be nearly impossible for the election software or a county election official to know that the vote database had been altered. End of the quote from the CNBC demo. The historically accurate exit polls showed Kerry should have won by 5 million votes, not the 3 million votes Bush claimed to have won by. And can this be proven when one-third of the votes were recorded on machines where there is no paper trail? Where a paper trail existed, the vote tally paralleled the exit polls. Where there was no paper trail, it skewed to the extreme for Bush. Recently, in 2005, the Government Accounting Office, GAO, reported that this type of hacking is possible. And a Leon County, Florida audit proved that Diebold machines can be hacked and completely change the election results without any evidence of this happening whatsoever left behind. So rebellion is afoot in the polling booths of the U.S. For the Zetas, the puppet master was not amused that the 2004 election had not gone to his choice, Kerry, as he was looking to have the U.S. military firmly back in the fold. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Diebold Wins, written November 2004. Much confusion exists over the 2004 election, expected to be a sweep for Kerry, which it in fact was. Did the turnout not indicate this? The long and anxious faces on the Bush camp on election eve indicate this? And the astonishing number of newspaper endorsements going to Kerry indicate this? As was known going into the election, one-third of the votes would be under the cover of Diebold computers, no paper trail, central tabulating machines with an extra set of counts that could override the real count, all designed to steal the vote, which it did, particularly in Florida and Ohio. The puppet master is not pleased and will enact revenge, and the puppet master has more cards than can be imagined. Bush has been weakened by the campaign. All manner of dirt about him coming forward from his AWOL status during the Vietnam era to his sitting for several clueless minutes in the classroom after being told the nation is under attack, to needing a prompter strapped to his back during the debates, to the truth about bin Laden remaining at large while Iraq remains a bungled disaster. The U.S. will find itself without cooperation when reaching out for help to other countries in their endeavors, while the puppet master enacts financial revenge, punishing the U.S. to weaken Bush and Cheney. For the likely next steps, one must look to the puppet master's goals. He wants the U.S. military under his control, which today it is not, as it has dual directives from Gore and Bush. Confusion in what the public is told, and thus confusion in the ranks. For this goal, he would want to weaken the Bush administration so that the U.S. military looks to their commanders and to Gore. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The Zetas warned that Bush busting was about to begin. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Bush busting, also written in November 2004. We have mentioned that the puppet master wants Kerry to win for the many reasons that would benefit his interests, and was not pleased when the Bush-Cheney team, assisted by Republican-designed voter tabulating computers, appeared to prevail. Now what? He will take the Bush camp down in subtle and not-so-subtle ways, reducing their influence in the world and within the United States to noise, irrelevant, discredited, despised, and ignored. What are the signs that this is in process? The erosion of support for the U.S. debt, funded during the Bush spurge years by the purchasing of U.S. notes, with Russia, China, and Japan indicating they are cutting back on purchases of these U.S. notes. The falling dollar, the result of many factors that have made U.S. products undesirable around the world, puts supporting the U.S. debt, which daily needs to be fed in order to keep the U.S. government running, in jeopardy. Current operations will be pinched, interest rates will be raised, and the U.S. lie that its economy is on the rise and jobs being created will be exposed. Corporate interests will run howling to the White House to demand the mess be fixed, creating an embattled Bush crowd hiding behind fences. Since the puppet master controls, in the main, by his great wealth, this can be considered a spanking from this source, and one where the pain has not yet begun to be felt. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Kerry quietly conceded, and per the Zetas, this was on the puppet master's command. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Kerry's concession, written January 2005. Why then would a determined former prosecutor, armed with so much evidence of wrongdoing, with the heart of the nation behind him and a history of leading the charge as he did during the Vietnam War, cave so quickly? It was a puppet master decision based on the mess laid out before him. His instructions to Bush and Cheney had been to lose, and Bush was anticipating this as his visage showed. But for some time, as we have mentioned, rebellion has been festering in the Bush administration, with men such as Cheney and Rove ambitious for more than a puppet status, wanting peership after the cataclysms, with control of both Americas, if not a larger chunk of the world. Israel also had been a rebellious puppet of late, as a shake-up is an opportunity, and the coming pole shift will be a shake-up bar none. A wise puppet master always has several alternative plans, and this was no exception. Contemplating a messy fight that would reveal to the public the extent to which they are manipulated, versus manipulation of the Bush administration to, in essence, decapitate them when the time comes, he chose the latter. It is not a coincidence that Cheney has been in hiding after the election, or that almost the entire Bush cabinet has bolted. They know what's coming. End of the quote from Zeta Talk on Kerry's concession. The first puppet master maneuver was to weaken Bush economically, and in this, the United States must also suffer. The U.S. funds its central banks from the Federal Reserve, which is funded by two great financial houses, three-quarters by the House of Rothschild, and the remaining quarter by Rockefeller. And I quote from an article called Economic Armageddon Predicted, from a website called FromTheWilderness.com. America's record trade deficit means the dollar will keep falling. To keep foreigners buying T-bills and prevent the resulting rise in inflation, Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan will be forced to raise interest rates further and faster than he wants. The result? U.S. consumers who are in debt up to their eyeballs will get pounded. To finance its current account deficit with the rest of the world, America has to import $2.6 billion in cash every working day. That's an amazing 80% of the entire world's net savings. Sustainable? Hardly. End of the quote. And since the stolen elections in 2004, the Fed has steadily raised its interest rates every quarter from a historic low to a punishing rate where personal and corporate bankruptcies are at an all-time high. Of course, this pinch could be eased if Bush were to give up his control in Iraq, save this expense, or reverse direction on the tax cut given to the rich, but neither is something he is likely to do. Thus, in a pinch, the U.S. is financially dependent upon continued cash flow from the rest of the world. How does this work? As the dollar drops and the world is considering using the euro as its base rather than the dollar, U.S. bonds become increasingly unpopular. After all, would you buy a bond that would be worth less when you cashed it in, even with interest, than when you purchased it? If foreign purchases of the bonds do not occur, then printing money to keep the U.S. afloat would be the answer. In fact, the M3 reporting, the reporting that shows where the Fed gets its money from, will no longer be available after March 2006. This is because, frankly, printing money to keep the U.S. afloat will occur. Like a banana republic. What then? And I quote from 321gold.com. The collapsing dollar will dramatically accelerate U.S. inflation and will pressure upward U.S. long-term interest rates. At this point, the Fed will find itself between deflation and hyperinflation. Deflating is where it raises interest rates, thus inducing a major economic depression, a collapse in real estate, and an implosion in bond, stock, and derivative markets with a total financial collapse. Or inflation, where it drowns the financial system in liquidity, hyperinflating the economy. To avoid deflation, they will resort to the printing presses. End of the quote. Under the incompetent Bush leadership, which led the U.S. into economic decline, jobs shipped overseas, money spent to sit on the oil fields of Iraq rather than build up the U.S. economy, money given to the rich rather than investing in the U.S., the dollar has dropped. Anticipating this, and to keep up the illusion, a Social Security scam was hatched, whereby these funds would pump up the dollar. The stock market is being supported, rather, by the Plunge Protection Team, which operates based on a Reagan-era executive order to prevent a dollar drop. Using the pension portfolios of military-industrial complex companies to buy faltering stock on the market, and returning these funds via increased prices for their wares. And I quote from the FinancialSense.com website, in spring of 2003, an analyst at the Pentagon Department intended to control program costs at federal contractors was startled to find that the overhead costs of virtually every airplane that Lockheed Martin sold the U.S. Air Force would soon be skyrocketing in price. The C-130J transport would go up from $1.193 billion in 2003 to $8.352 billion by 2006. The F-16 program would jump from $3.49 billion in 2004 to $6.66 billion in 2005, and then on to $14.84 billion in 2006. End of the quote. Well, you see what's happening here. Taxpayer money is going into keeping the Dow afloat so that Bush can look good. Well, they were hoping to get Social Security funds in there, and in 2005, this was the big push. With the failure of the Social Security initiative, the Bush candle was evidently flickering, signs of stress in the news, temper tantrums at press conferences. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Flickering Candle, written June 2005. Financial clout wields more than leverage on funding the national debt. It flows like water through the maze of economics, ramifications on all fronts, and thus can affect the majority of those in power positions to act in accordance with the clout. Bush and his handlers do not control this clout. The puppet master does, and has been tolerant of his rebellious puppets only to the extent that he wishes the status quo to continue, to not rock the boat during these very turbulent financial times. Bush is known to take tranquilizers, lipid busters, and booze, all of which only go so far as reality presses in, and all have their side effects. Long before the mind snaps, it slips, and these slips out in the world too stressful to bear increasingly happen, and happen for longer and longer periods of time. Thus, as Nancy states, the Bush candle flickers. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Then another setback, as the Navy, the sole arm of the military that had stood behind Bush, announced it was also in revolt. During a spontaneous meeting at NORTHCOM, under the control of an admiral, a meeting that occurred as Hurricane Rita assaulted the Gulf Coast. And I quote from the Global Research website, dated September 24, 2005, U.S. Northern Command and Hurricane Rita. Until the 24th of September, there was no indication from official or media sources of Secretary Rumsfeld's participation in the NORTHCOM meetings. It is now confirmed that a top-level meeting was held under NORTHCOM auspices, which included the participation of President Bush, Defense Secretary Don Rumsfeld through video call, Department of Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff, and FEMA Director Vice Admiral Thad Allen via video call. U.S. public opinion was not informed. It was not mentioned by President Bush at his September 23rd press conference. End of the quote. Bush was on TV, touring about the hurricane area after this NORTHCOM visit, wearing the same shirt for 2 days, his visage during photo ops at the NORTHCOM meeting showing devastation. What happened there? And I quote from Zeta Talk, Bush Countercoup, written September 26, 2005. What happened to the swagger, the bravado, quips like, bring 'em on, raid the attacks against U.S. soldiers in Iraq? Bush looks defeated, deflated, depressed, and frankly scared. The loss of his swagger is new and has presented just since his visit to NORTHCOM on the day Hurricane Rita hit, and military exercises simulating martial law were in full swing around the nation. Is there a relationship? We have mentioned that the U.S. military revolted against Bush during the vacation month of August 2003, removing the football from his control, the nuclear codes, and relaying that he was no longer considered their commander-in-chief. Gore, as a legitimate elected commander-in-chief, was whom they were reporting to in the interim. All branches of the U.S. military except the Navy were so inclined, the Navy with their nuclear submarines in control of timekeeping and observatories remaining loyal. Thus, we recently had an admiral assigned at NORTHCOM, the military arm of Homeland Security for defense of the entire North American continent. Bush was not invited to go to NORTHCOM for the exercises during the busy weekend when Rita was slamming the coast and VP Cheney was in surgery. He was taken there under arrest. The unmistakable change in his visage after being released, a clue to what had occurred. Scared, unable to smile, wearing the same shirt for days, even when appearing in public. Cowed, brought to heel. What happened at NORTHCOM? If the U.S. military was in revolt, except for the Navy, find a way around the top brass, coming in from the side door via NORTHCOM and Homeland Security. This all assumes that NORTHCOM and the Navy continue to be willing to follow the dictates of Homeland Security. Oops. They have some bad news for Bush and company. They joined the revolt. Now what? The face of a frightened Bush tells all. There are no other plans or schemes in place. No recouping of resources. No second parry. He stands as a figurehead only, hoping to appease those truly in control and hoping that no one notices his fall from grace. End of the quote from Zeta Tau. Well, after that, we had Bush and Cheney standing in front of the military on the TV as much as possible, trying to keep the public fooled. Following the stolen 2004 election, a pattern of leaks started, embarrassing leaks. The Downing Street memo was one such leak from the UK. And I quote from the Times Online, May 1, 2005, the secret Downing Street memo. Secret and strictly personal, UK eyes only. Dated July 23, 2002. Subject, Iraq Prime Minister's Meeting, 23 July. This record is extremely sensitive. No further copies should be made. It should be shown only to those with a genuine need to know its contents. C reported on his recent talks in Washington. There was a perceptible shift in attitude. Military action was now seen as inevitable. Bush wanted to remove Saddam through military action, justified by the conjunction of terrorism and weapons of mass destruction. But the intelligence and facts were being fixed around the policy. The key phrase in the secret memo was, facts being fixed around the policy, meaning matters like the forged Niger memo asserting that Saddam had tried to buy nuclear material from Niger. This led directly into a Bush attack on Ambassador Wilson, the Plame affair. And I quote from the Washington Post, October 30, 2005, a leak, then a deluge. Wilson was a former ambassador who traveled to Niger in February 2002 after Cheney requested elaboration on a Defense Department report based on erroneous information originating from the Italian Security Service that Iraq had an agreement to buy processed uranium ore, or yellow cake. Upon his return, Wilson reported to CIA and State Department analysts that he had found no support for the allegation and had reasons to believe it was untrue. When the Bush administration nonetheless launched a public relations campaign that highlighted the uranium report, most prominently in the President's State of the Union speech on January 28, 2003, Wilson began raising questions among friends in government. End of the quote from the Washington Post. This rolled into the White House retaliation against Wilson, exposing his wife, Valerie Plame, as a covert CIA agent. Some speculate that this was to stop the CIA from discovering that the Italian memo Bush referred to as a deliberate forgery, done at the bequest of Bush and Company. Valerie was working within the CIA in that area, and their work came to a halt with her outing. So while trying to stop a second leak from Ambassador Wilson, the White House brought itself indictments. Scooter Libby, Cheney's right-hand man, with more indictments likely to come. Then came the CIA rendition flight exposé, where Cheney as the torture VP and Gonzalez as the torture attorney general were exposed as having secret torture prisons in many countries. Suspects kidnapped and delivered to countries where torture can be conducted, while Bush and Condi continue to prat to the public, "We do not torture." And I quote from a PrisonPlanet.com website, "Demand for probe into CIA torture flights, dated December 1, 2005. European and United Nations Human Rights Conventions make it illegal for countries to be complicit in torture. The 1988 Criminal Justice Act also makes torture a criminal offense wherever it is committed. If people are being moved from a jurisdiction where torture is illegal to a jurisdiction where torture is permissible, that seems to be wholly contrary to international law." End of the quote from Prison Planet. Reports came in from Finland, Sweden, Germany, the UK, and other European countries where plane spotters began watching for CIA planes and reporting them. The EU stated that any country participating knowingly would be expelled from the EU, and the torture flights began delivering their prisoners to African countries instead. The next searing leak was regarding the NSA spying, which started prior to 9/11, based on executive orders signed repeatedly by Bush. To bypass the courts, bypass the Congress, and just wiretap whom they wished, when they wished, Bush as king, with no checks and balances. There was no reason to bypass existing FISA laws, which allow fast action so that the court does not need to approve for some 72 hours after action is taken in hot pursuit, but does require the court to be notified eventually. In this, a paper trail is established, which apparently the Bush administration wanted to avoid entirely. And I quote from the Washington Post, December 31, 2005, an article called Justice Department Investigating Leak of NSA Wiretapping. News of the domestic spying program by the NSA, which is normally restricted to eavesdropping overseas, set off a firestorm of criticism from lawmakers and civil liberties advocates and contributed to the administration's failure to persuade Congress to pass a renewed version of the Patriot Act. The GOP chairman of the State Judiciary Committee had vowed to hold hearings on the NSA program, and some other Republicans have demanded a congressional probe into the leak. End of the quote from the Washington Post. If 2005 was anything, it was the year that embarrassing leaks ripped open the soft underbelly of the Bush administration. By the end of 2005, the setbacks had the Bush crowd on the ropes. In fact, the Bush visage showing fear as he retired for the holidays, something the Zetas called the face of fear. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Face of Fear, written December 19, 2005. We predicted on August 19, 2005, as a recap on the decapitation process, that three volleys would be used during this process. The first, the financial squeeze mentioned above. The second, unveiling political corruption in the Bush White House. At that time, the Downing Street memo had just emerged, but since August, the delay in Libya indictments using the NSA for domestic spying, GOA confirmation of voter fraud possibilities, the 9/11 cover-up allowed to hit the news, and 2004 voter fraud evidence allowed to hit the news. The third volley, eroding public sentiment. He has become the target of public ridicule everywhere. We predicted at that time that a maelstrom undercutting Bush would occur, as the puppet master had set this into play, and there had not yet been a battle that he has lost. Why would these setbacks create this climate of fear in Bush, when not out of keeping with what has been occurring for months? Is the NSA revelation worse than the Downing Street memo? Is the loss of the Patriot Act support worse than his failure to deliver Social Security funds to Wall Street? Is lack of an exit strategy worse than the CIA rendition and torture camp revelations? What happened to the bravado, the cocky swagger? To understand the mindset, look to the reaction of a bully when cornered and overpowered. The bully exults in his ability to create pain and panic in his victims, but when the tables are turned, is shown to be a coward. Might they be impeached? Might they be in jail when the pole shift hits? Subject to the sadism of prison guards and inmates? Might they be unable to muster defense of their bunkers or not be allowed into the bunkers when the time comes? This is the face of fear you see. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Bush as the executive has the legal right to declare martial law based on an emergency which he and he alone can determine is an emergency. That quote from Capitol Hill Blue, Bush could seize absolute control of the U.S. government, dated January 13, 2006. President George W. Bush has signed executive orders giving him sole authority to impose martial law, suspend habeas corpus, and ignore the Posse Comitatus Act that prohibits deployment of U.S. troops on American streets. This would give him absolute dictatorial power over the government with no checks and balances. End of the quote from Capitol Hill Blue. Well, what should the citizens of the U.S. anticipate as this cornered animal increasingly is squeezed? And I quote from Zeta Talk, Power Grab, written January 15, 2006. We have stated that martial law is unlikely to be instigated in countries such as the U.S., where the populace is used to freedoms and would resist. Such maneuvers succeed only for a short time and in the presence of a real emergency calling for such draconian measures. But what if this were the Bush plan, and Bush proceeded according to plan? What if a frightened Bush reacted like a cornered animal, going for the ultimate stance, declaring martial law and himself as a president who does not need to listen to the courts or the Congress? How would this play out? First, one should not negate the puppet master's influence. When he set about to decapitate the Bush administration, he certainly envisioned such a scenario, a frightened Bush not going quietly into the night. To counter a Bush move to preemptively call martial law and assume kingship of the U.S. and its military, or make a play for this position, he would be unlikely to utilize assets within the U.S. for this. He would use foreign powers against U.S. assets abroad, placing the U.S. military in the uncomfortable position of having to make choices. What if Russia were to make moves toward the vast Alaska lands, oil-rich, and closer to Russian territory than the central states? What if Hawaii, Guam, and in particular the Middle East oil fields were being threatened? The military is already stretched too thin and could hardly keep peace at home and fight other fronts as well as keep a foothold in Iraq. The oil grab would be the first to go, with the oil fields in Alaska on the lines. Thus, martial law would likely be ended immediately by the Bush cabal, a quick about face, with the hope of returning to the previous status quo. Second, given that there is rebellion in Congress and in the U.S. military, with talk of impeachment on more lips than the media admits to, there would hardly be wholehearted cooperation. Orders would be delayed, lost, not understood, or endlessly discussed. It would be a time when the schools would be out, jobs not attended to, transportation at a halt, TV and radio stations broadcasting the stage with few actors, and these confused. Civilization in the United States would grind to a halt while the public stayed glued to their TV sets, awaiting the next step. Does one order the public to go back to work in a free society? Does the public risk going out on the streets when they have been told that lack of cooperation will get them shot or jailed with no recourse? Everyone but the Bush White House would soon see this as unworkable. Third, there is very real likelihood of an open rebellion in Congress and the courts should such a power play be made. Complete paralysis at the helm of the federal government. No motion in any direction possible. Just endless debate and argument. Fourth, although endlessly anticipated, no fake terrorism attacks will occur within the U.S., just as none since 9/11 have been allowed to occur, nor have weapons of mass destruction been allowed to be planted in Iraq. We stated that benign aliens, ourselves and others, have prevented this from happening, although such maneuvers have been tried hundreds of times. Fifth, and a very real possibility, is assassination, disguised as poor health or death by heart attack. Bush is a drunk, known to use cocaine, evidence of this abundant for the media to discover to embellish any suicide or mental breakdown. That he has been on antidepressants is well known and in the public record. Thus, Bush would almost have to be in a suicidal rage to call martial law, given this. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. That concludes our broadcast. Thank you for being with us. Remember to carry love in your heart. It's the commodity of the future. As the Zetas say, love may have a blooming going into the shift, as it ought.
those with great love in their hearts responding to the realization that little else matters.